Welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. In these Primer episodes, we explore the insights and backgrounds of our guests to give you a bit of an idea of what they've been up to and how they got involved in the tech and venture ecosystem. Enjoy. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today, I am really excited to have with me in the studio, Josh Bell. Josh is one of the founding and general partners at Dawn Capital, which recently raised an incredible $700 million fund, despite the headwinds that we're seeing in the VC ecosystem. Dawn is a specialist B2B software investor, backing category-defining global companies at Series A and B, often following on all the way through to exit. Josh, really great to have you in the studio with me.
Thanks, Arish. It's a pleasure to be here.
Amazing. Let's dive straight in. So for our audience to get to know you a bit better, it'd be great to understand what your first job was.
Yeah. So straight out of college, I went to McKinsey, did the kind of usual few years learning the kind of commercial playbook of how to go into a company, understand some of the issues, put together a solution set, and then either be ignored or kind of, you know, follow it through. And actually, in the initial 2 years I had at McKinsey, I learned what I think I would have learned in many years elsewhere. I decided to stay on. I actually ended up doing nearly 6 years with the firm. Wow. And it allowed me to kind of go beyond just generalizing to kind of more specialism. And I went deep into early doors fintech.
Amazing. And what were you doing directly before you got into the tech and venture ecosystem? Was that still McKinsey?
That was McKinsey, yeah. So leaving McKinsey, I got together with two friends who are now my partners, colleagues. This was back in 2006. And we raised Dawn One. So we're now kind of 17 years in. But my career today has really been two firms, yep. McKinsey and Dawn since the mid-noughties.
We don't see much of that. So what was it that triggered that move into establishing Dawn with the two partners?
I think it was an enormously exciting time to be able to kind of deploy capital into interesting young businesses, combined with having had 5-6 years on the advisory side, I really wanted to be kind of on the equity side of the table. Mm. So being there for kind of longer term decisions, sitting alongside founders as we kind of germinated from early stage businesses right through. And, you know, we have a lot of our portfolio is kind of through to IPO and then holding beyond. That's just the polar opposite of what you can do in a kind of large global consulting firm.
Yeah. And I guess in 2000, you had obviously post.com. 2007, you had global financial crisis. Yep. So that must have been a very interesting time to be building a fund, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, the challenge we had was the fundraising period was kind of spanned from late 05, early 06 through to first close was late 07, literally in the weeks after Lehman went under. Mm. So, you know, we had managed to bring the LPs on board to get going with Dawn One. But then there was certainly a bit of, you know, struggling for them to find the pens in the weeks after Lehman went down. We managed to kind of hold it together. Dawn One was launched. And then that was a great time to be investing into these exciting young companies.
Yeah, for sure. And what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't in the venture ecosystem?
I truly have no idea. It was a path I wanted to explore, ended up in. Within venture, I love seeing the early stage journeys of companies being built. I'm not sure at all I have the skill set anywhere near to be a founder, but something connected to the space is certainly where I'd want to be spending my time if I weren't in venture.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I don't think anyone who's ever been on the podcast has actually explicitly said that as an investor, they don't think they have what it takes to be a founder. I think a lot of investors have the belief that they could be, but have never actually taken that entrepreneurial journey. I think it's really interesting because whilst we see a lot of founder operators turned investors in the US. We don't see as much of that in the UK, but equally, they are two very different skill sets, right? One is very much in the weeds and the other one is a bit more sort of helicopter view.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, we sort of started out, three of us working out of a basement, essentially all as kind of self-employed individuals finding exciting companies to invest in. I do think how Dawn has evolved, though, you know, now we have a team of 40 in London. Mm. You know, we're very much, you know, a business ourselves. And, you know, we need to run everything that comes with being a business. So, you know, whilst I say, well, I wouldn't be building a business, you know, I wouldn't be founding that. Actually, I think that happened without kind of noticing it over the last decade and a half.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about Dawn, right? So what is the sort of total AUM? What do you invest in? What stages, what geographies, check sizes?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a pan-European fund. We raised our most recent fund, as you mentioned, of $700 million. We have about $2 billion under management. You know, we started our journey back in, as I said, kind of 16, 17 years ago with our first fund of $30 million. So it's been a super interesting growth journey for us in the checks we've been deploying, the nature of companies we've invested in. But essentially, they have the same characteristics around, you know, it's terrific teams tackling huge problems, large markets with a defensible technology. Mm. The size of check needed to attack that market has also evolved quite substantially over the same period. So in a sense, you know, whilst we're deploying from a fund 20, 30 times larger than our first one, actually, in terms of the number of companies per fund we're investing in and so on, it's not necessarily wildly different from where a $3 million check back in 08 could take a company to where they, you know, our most recent check, which we deployed with a business, a payments business called Bright out of Stockholm, and we've invested $45 million. Mm. But actually, that's to work through the Series A journey.
Mm. Yeah. This season of Nothing Ventured is proudly sponsored by Emerge One. Emerge One provides fractional CFO support to venture-backed tech startups and scale-ups. They work with businesses from seed to Series B that have been backed by some of the UK, US, and Europe's best venture capital funds. They provide support from capital allocation and management, KPIs and reporting, fundraising support, financial modeling, investor relations, and investor management. Come check them out at emergeone.co.uk when you're scaling fast and have need of a CFO. I think, to your point, it's that sort of evolution. Back in those days, there was probably less capital chasing, fewer businesses. There's now more capital chasing more businesses, but there's equally more competition. So the sort of capital you need to deploy to see those sort of outcomes has probably grown as well, right? As companies become more sophisticated, competition hots up, and the market has essentially expanded to such a large extent, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the outcomes are much larger. So, you know, if you bring your A game to actually winning the deals, and we spend a lot of time kind of developing a prepared mind to really show founders how we understand the business and the markets in which they're building. If you could do that, actually the markets we're in now are vast. Our sector is within enterprise software, so we invest in B2B. We don't do any B2C, but we invest into B2B. Within that, we have a large focus in fintech, which is where my checks are deployed. If you look at payments businesses within fintech within Europe, you have many, you know, multi-billion outcomes or even decacorn outcomes. So, you know, when we can deploy a check of $45 million into Bright, actually there are many paths to seeing a 10, 20, 30x return on that capital.
Yeah, amazing. So you talked about Bright, but if you talk about three ventures, either inside or outside the portfolio that you're really excited about, what would those be?
As in other companies which we'd invest in?
Either other companies that you would like to invest in or companies within the portfolio that you're really excited about.
You know, so some interesting journeys which I've been on myself was, so one which does resonate with everyone because I think everyone's now seen them, is iZettle.
Yeah.
Mobile payments devices. We invested into the business back in 2014, so nearly 10 years ago. At that point, there were large verticals and large segments of the economy which were really cash only, from hairdressers to market traders to taxi drivers. And actually, iZettle was at the forefront of a journey where it enabled those people to be able to take card payments, to have associated solutions around accounting and so on, all the software which
you even see buskers now on the underground.
Everything, right? You know, charitable donations are massive through that. So for us, that was being able to see a super interesting product, early doors product market fit, to be able to deploy growth capital into that. And through that journey where Dawn was an investor, we led a couple of rounds and I was on the board and so on, we ended up selling that business for $2 billion and change to PayPal. That's a classic journey which went well. And behind that was all the boxes being ticked of, you know, superb founders in Jakob and Mark and Magnus. A huge market, kind of payments. What can go wrong there? Combined with, whilst it seemed a straightforward solution, actually there was a lot of complexity to it.
Well, you had a hardware plus software both sort of situation on top of everything else, yeah.
And now, you know, it's, now it's a different world, actually. Now you don't even need the hardware. It could all go straight on iOS, straight to the phone. This all seems so straightforward now. In those days, it wasn't obvious. You know, there were potentially enormous challenges in convincing taxi drivers or whoever to necessarily want to move away from the unrecorded economy. And, you know, maybe tax revenues benefited as a result. You know, we'll see. But that was a classic journey for us in terms of finding customers who loved a product and our capital being able to be used in the most effective way possible.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting. I think another business within the portfolio, which I would say is exciting, would be Tink. This was another business actually out of Stockholm. We love investing in the Nordics. For Tink, that was an open banking play. And our team there in Daniel and Frederick, what they had built was connections between all the banks across Europe effectively, of being able to open up all their APIs so that open banking solutions for consumers could be then built by the developers.
Got it.
And that was a business which just had enormous value by virtue of the network and the network effect, which had been built by connecting the banks. Once again, this was a complex technical problem by great founders in a huge market. That, you know, we ended up selling a couple of years ago for a similar amount of money, actually, and this one was to Visa. Perhaps the journey ended too early there because, you know, with open banking, we're only now seeing it kind of impact into wallets. But another hugely exciting journey. I don't know, outside the portfolio, we see, you know, we call it the anti-portfolio. So many companies which have transformed people's lives. And I often look at the ones in B2C because, you know, then I can have fewer regrets as we wouldn't have been able to invest in them.
Sure.
I think one which for me is has been life-changing and democratizing is Airbnb.
Yeah.
You know, classic venture investment. It's changed how people can afford and experience vacations, and it's opened up a huge and whole ecosystem. And combined with that, it's managed to actually build a company from zero to $100 billion of market cap just through the combination of great founders and the solution. So that's, you know, I'd love to have a $100 billion company in our portfolio. It's not happened yet. Maybe on the way.
It's never too late. Never too late, Josh. I mean, interestingly, we recently had Martin Sibley on, who was one of the co-founders of Accommable, which essentially exited to Airbnb and was essentially building Airbnb for people with disabilities. I'm actually about to put a very small check into a founder that is building sort of the Airbnb for work, right? So so essentially off sites. So if you look at most Airbnbs, and I've certainly spent my fair share of time, they're very difficult to work from because sometimes the internet doesn't work. There's not often a, you know, a dedicated kind of workspace. And so he's trying to solve that. And exactly as you said, I think there's a whole kind of industry that's been built around Airbnbs. So if you look at Airbnb on its own, yes, 100 billion outcome, but actually the economy that it's grown in the travel space around it is actually immense and far exceeds Airbnb's worth.
Completely. And that ecosystem also creates the resilience. So Airbnb will be here to stay. And a lot of its value derives just simply from that ecosystem existing.
And during the pandemic, I remember this actually quite clearly, because I think they took in some debt at the time because, you know, everyone assumed, well, travel is over, Airbnb is dead and gone. And actually they came out even stronger.
Completely.
And I would argue that actually the use case has grown even further because post-pandemic people have decided that they want to spend more time
traveling and seeing different locations and potentially working from different locations as well. So never too late. I'm sure you'll have one pop up on the radar soon enough. But for the time being, Josh, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks, Harris.